The Queen's Jewish Link presents the Jewish Living Podcast, the show that examines the many facets of Orthodox Jewish life. Here's your host, Izzo Zwirin.
Well, the summer has concluded, and with the end of camp and vacations come the daily grind and the cooler weather. One other thing that comes as Labor Day passes is the kids going back to school. And with the start of school in the Frum world comes the inevitable questions of how well your chosen school works for your child, and of course, how much we are paying in tuition. But some have a very different way of dealing with those questions, and here to discuss those methods is this week's guest.
Hi, I'm Chani Kirshner. I am a homeschool mom of four beautiful children, and I am also the creator and director of the Gesher Judaic Studies program, a program for online schoolers and homeschoolers and public schoolers across the country.
Chani will go over her program Gesher and how it supports families choosing to homeschool or go through the public school system. So Chani, thank you for joining me this week. I want to get a little bit of a background on you. You said a little bit that you were a mother to four, a homeschooler. Give me a little bit more of your background and how you came to be a mother of four homeschooled children.
Sure. Thanks for asking. I started off, I could start from when I was born, but I'm not going to start that far back. My background professionally is as an educator, a day school Judaic studies educator. So I spent many years teaching in day schools. That was both before I had kids and after I had kids. And as my kids got older, I explored the possibility of educating them at home because of the financial struggles that we faced as a mono-Orthodox family in America, raising our kids, and the cost of day school has just, continued to rise over the years. And also educationally, I kind of always was intrigued by the idea of homeschoolers because I have a couple friends who homeschool themselves. And it always seemed like a very blissful existence. And, I pictured kids running barefoot in the fields, and, it always kind of intrigued me. And I always kind of looked into it, even though I was still a day school teacher. But once we had the double-edged sword problem of 4 years ago in 2018, where the financial was always an issue for us, but we had it coupled with an educational issue as well, where one of my children needed more specialized reading instruction. And I felt like as a teacher, I might be able to tackle the problem myself. And so my husband and I decided that first year that we would homeschool for 1 year. I finally convinced him to do it because I was already on board for many years. And so we started in 2018, that school year, and we haven't looked back. It's been awesome.
So I want to ask you a little bit more about specifically the having to convince your husband. So specifically, if maybe one parent is on the fence about this and the other parent is willing to go into. So what type of conversations did you have internally to make this happen?
It's funny because for a long time before I actually started homeschooling, I was on a lot of homeschool Facebook support groups. And this question came up a lot. If you type into the search bar of any of these homeschool groups, I really want to homeschool, but my spouse doesn't. You'll find a myriad of resources that parents have used to convince them, from articles. You can find so many articles on Google, top 10 reasons why homeschool is good for your kids and how to convince your spouse to homeschool when they don't want to, but you do. So a big factor that I use to help convince him is that we can always go back. It's not a permanent decision. And if we decide to try it for a year and it doesn't work for either my kids or for me or for him, for whatever reason, we can always go back to day school. And a big concern of us was that our kids were going to turn weird. And I say that in quotation marks because we all have the picture of homeschoolers as the kind of kids who, I mentioned this before, who work in the zoo. You're like, I don't know if, I really want that for my kids. You always think they have problems socializing. A lot of hot button topics for people who don't homeschool is, well, how do you get your kids to socialize? How do you socialize them? And in homeschool circles, there was a meme going around at one point We don't socialize our children. We socialize our dogs, you know. It was like you don't kids don't need to be taught how to, you know, be around other people. That's what you do when you raise kids in a family and you have other people around, and it they just learn that from their interaction. So that was a big piece for him. You know, he didn't want them to kind of turn into the kind of people who can't be around other people. And I used all of my resources that I found online to convince him to say, you know, this isn't going to happen. I promise. As long as we continue doing what we're doing and having company over for Shabbos and having play dates, then they'll stay normal. And if at any point we see that something is off and they can't carry on the conversation with their friends or they're feeling really, really left out or behind, then we can reconsider. We can always pivot.
It's funny. Do your kids go to camp?
You know, they didn't go to camp until 2 summers ago. We started, and it was always a really big deal for me that when they got old enough, I wanted them to attend an overnight Jewish sleepaway camp because I wanted them to have that social outlet. That was something that I always had as a kid, and I had such fond memories. And I remember listening to a This American Life podcast about camp people versus non-camp people, and how camp people just have this, you know, aura around camp that they can't explain to other people. And I had that as a kid, so I always wanted that for my kids, especially because we homeschooled. I really wanted them to have that opportunity. So as soon as they got old enough, I started, you know, calling camp directors, applying for jobs, because of course we're not just going to send our kids away because overnight sleepaway camp is expensive. So I wanted to be able to work there to help mitigate the cost a little bit. So thank God last summer and this summer we went away to sleepaway camp, and I say we because I went with them. I ran the cooking elective at camp, and they were able to go. And it was really, it's such a valuable, wonderful experience for them. I really could not have asked for a better summer experience for them.
All right, I want to get into a little bit of the program that you created. You could talk a little bit about the history behind it. You created a program called Gesher, and I know nobody could see this right now, but right behind Connie is the sign that says Gesher, and I think this is your home office. With Parsha,
Yeah.
for those of you who are wondering when we recorded this, it says Parsha's Akev, so it's
Exactly.
still up there. So if you give me a little bit of a background on Gesher and what is it and how does it work?
Okay, so go back to the beginning or not
Sure.
really? Okay.
Oh, sure.
So when we first moved to Florida, that's where I am currently. My husband and I decided that we would try sending our kids to the local public school. Again, I am an educator myself, but I have always, since I was a student in grad school, been exploring and troubled by the cost of Jewish day school tuition in America. And this goes back 20 years. So I said, when I have kids, you know, there has to be, maybe we can go back to the Talmud Torah type of, you know, existence that our parents had in, you know, the 1940s and 50s, where they went to public school, but they socialized with their Jewish friends after, and they learned what they needed to learn. You know, they all did it. They're all productive Jewish adults who lead, you know, Jewish lives. Why can't we do the same thing? So we sent our oldest to a public school, and then we actually transferred him to a Hebrew language charter school called Ben Gamla in Florida. And when he was there, I had a few friends that were in similar situations. And together with them, they asked me as a teacher, you know, could you maybe teach our kids in the afternoons while all of us send our kids to public school during the day? So at that point, my oldest was in kindergarten and I had very little kids at home. I said, I really can't do this. I can't teach for 2 hours every day. But what I can do is create a curriculum and maybe we'll hire some teachers, maybe some college kids who are home or, you know, just post college, to help teach our kids. So that's what we did. So that was the original, you know, that's the origin story of Gesher, that it actually existed in that iteration in 2014 in a neighborhood clubhouse of one of the developments here. And the kids would basically come, it was maybe 7 or 8 kids. They would come 3 times a week from 4 to 6 p.m. And the teachers that I, you know, that I found in Boca would teach them Chumash for the older kids, Hebrew reading for the younger kids, and Parsha for everyone. And they loved it. The parents loved it. What happened was at the end of that year, I went back to work because there was a teacher who went on emergency maternity leave at the preschool that I was at. And so the director of the preschool asked me to fill in for the last few months of the year. And once I did that, I realized, you know, I could really go back to work now that I see that I'm, you know, capable of going back to a full-time job. and put my kids in school. And this was what I had always thought my solution would be to day school education, that I would work and my kids would go to the same school and we would be able to afford it. Growing up, my father was the principal of the high school in Atlanta, Georgia. And that was how we went to high, you know, that was what we did. We went to high school because he was the principal there. We were able to afford Jewish high school. And you know, that also, just to speak to another piece, that was always very important to me, just education and you know, being active in my children's education. And, you know, I loved it, even though I didn't always love it when he was there, I loved that he was there, you know, that I felt like he, you know, it was a great presence for me to be able to have my dad in the school. And it was just, I wanted to be there for my kids. I have a, you know, I don't know, I liked it, I wanted to do it myself. So I went back to work. But then, as I told you, so Gesher kind of fizzled out at that point. What happened was I was teaching full time, and that was when the price I was paying for day school was still more than I was making. So I was giving my entire salary to tuition, plus we were still paying on top of that because thank God we have four children. So it was still very expensive, but that wasn't enough to bring us to homeschool. I kind of, you know, was exploring it. I knew friends that did it, but I wasn't ready to pull the trigger just yet. But once I had that daughter with the educational issue where she needed more specialized reading instruction, she needed a more explicit approach to teaching her how to read, that was when we decided to homeschool. And once I decided to homeschool, I decided to revive Gesher. And this time I ran it out of my house. And I ran it like 2 days a week at that point for kids in public school and kids in who were also homeschoolers. I knew one or two at that point. And I ran it out of my house on Monday and Tuesday afternoons from 4 to 6 p.m. And parents loved it. Local parents in Boca loved it because basically it was like a Hebrew school for frum kids. So, you know, you were getting that Hebrew school vibe. It was in my house. So we baked challah and I did like an edible parsha project for every parsha. Like, you know, we put M&Ms around pretzel sticks on a graham cracker sheet for, you know, the 12 tribes, 12 sons around Yaakov on his deathbed. Like, really, it was just so fun. The kids loved it. I loved it. My kids, I thought it was really for them to help them socialize. But by the end, they just were like, you know, they were burnt out because I made them help me set up and clean up every time we had it. So they were like, I don't know, do we really need this at home? Can we do it somewhere else? But they were, you know, they were game for the while that we had it. And then COVID hit. And
I feel like so many of my interviews of late have been, yes, and then COVID hit.
And then COVID hit. I feel like that's the title of everyone's book, yes, right? Of everyone's autobiography. And then COVID hit. So we closed, I didn't run Gesher for like 2 weeks. And then I saw that people were running classes on this thing called Zoom. What was Zoom? You know, I used Zoom like maybe once or twice before for, you know, I don't know, a webinar, I don't know, a meeting with a couple other people, but I was like, I'm gonna learn it and we're gonna do it. So I gave out the, you know, I quickly downloaded Zoom. At that point, it was not, you know, I didn't have the paid version, so it could only be 40 minutes long, you know, and it, all of a sudden I was like, wait a minute, what? It's ending. And I gave it out to all the parents and I ran, I would say, about four classes till the end of the school year on Zoom. And it was great. And the kids loved it. And the parents loved it. And at that point, once it ended, I looked at my husband and I said, I could do this online and reach so many more Jewish children, because all of a sudden this opens the world of education to not just kids that live within driving distance of my house, but kids anywhere. And at that point I was thinking kids in South Africa, kids in Africa, kids in, you know, Mexico, I don't know, anywhere. I was like, I could do this everywhere. We could educate the whole Jewish world, all the Jewish children. So quickly, within a month, I got everything. I created myself a website with my brother's help. I just did it on Wix. And, you know, I came up with what classes I would want my kids to know, and, you know, what things that I would want, that I'm basically educating my children in any way, right? I'm teaching them Parsha anyway. I'm teaching them Chumash anyway. Okay, so I'm going to make that into a Gesher class. And that fall of 2020, I started Gesher online. And it was unbelievable, the response, because parents all over the country were educating their kids at home at that point. A lot of parents were doing it. So I had almost 100 kids that first year. And I taught kids both in the morning and in the afternoon to accommodate kids in different time zones. So I would do the same class in the morning as in the afternoon. And it took off. Thank God. It really took off. And that is Gesher in its current iteration.
So let me ask you a question. That's all right. That's a perfectly sane story. I'm all for it. A lot of people, when they had to do COVID classes on Zoom, teachers had to all of a sudden on the fly adapt to online classes. How is that for you? Like when you're teaching these kids who are, forget where they are time zone wise, but they're definitely not in your room, in the same room as you. How is that as a teacher in a classroom form when they were in your home, when they were there with you? How is that compare in terms of what you were able to give over discipline wise, if there was the need for that? How is it different?
You know, there is so much discipline in a regular classroom that goes on. And by discipline, I don't mean, you know, punitive punishments. I just mean like classroom management.
Right.
You know, you're always walking around the room and redirecting, and there's so much. I found Zoom to be infinitely easier because there's no classroom management. There's no, you know, kids are, you know, in class, you had to be aware of whether kids are what they're doing in their desks and fidgeting, and there are a lot of fidget on Zoom. They could do whatever they want. They could be laying on their bed, you know, that's fine, as long as they're completely covered, you know, clothing wise and it's fine. And at the beginning, I really didn't know how to manage Zoom. I you know, I didn't know that you're supposed to mute all the kids when they come into class. You know, that's rule number one now in Gesher, that, you know, it just automatically mutes everyone. Kids are not allowed to change their names on Zoom. I didn't know that when I first started. So, you know, a kid would turn off their screen and change their name to reconnecting as a joke, you know, and they would just, you know, reconnecting for an hour, and they would think that, you know, they pulled one over me. I didn't really get all that. I'm much better at Zoom.
So they did
right
pull
now.
One over you.
Yeah, they did. Or they would change it to, like, you know, bathroom words and think they were being hilarious. But it took me, like, you know, I was good actually that I had that month in 2020, I would say in May, to kind of work out all the kinks, so that when I started in September, I really knew what I wanted the virtual classroom to look like. So I tell parents, I always give them like online pointers. If you have two kids, put them in separate rooms so they're not, you know, bothering each other. It might help to have for them to have headphones on, because then it blocks out the outside noise that's going on in the house. Sometimes it helps kids to sit at a desk with a pencil and paper to be able to take notes. For my Chumash classes, I offer workbooks, so they need a space where they can have a Chumash and a workbook next to them. So, you know, I think it's actually, as a teacher, it's much easier for me.
So tell me a little bit about the actual classes that Gesher offers. So what classes are you teaching? Who is it for? What age group? What skill level?
So the classes are for elementary schoolers. So I use the term elementary school because it's really kindergarten to about sixth grade. I had a couple seventh graders in classes last year. And what's really been unique about Gesher, as opposed to traditional schools, is that you can really educate kids of different ages in the same classroom. And what do I mean by that? I mean, in my Chumash class, for example, I had a six-year-old who was extremely bright and was very motivated to learn Chumash, already was fluently reading Hebrew. And I had a 12-year-old who had never opened up a Chumash before, and they were in the same class. And people always ask me, how do you manage that? It's seamless in a virtual classroom, because especially if the kids are homeschoolers, and that's because homeschoolers are used to lifelong learning, meaning I don't need to know certain things because I'm a certain age. I may not know things until I'm a grown-up, but I'm always learning. So I want to learn Chumash now. I'm going to go to a Chumash 1 class, for example, where I'm just learning Chumash. I want to go to a Spanish class. I'm going to a Spanish class. I might be with 7-year-olds from, you know, Mexico, but I'm an adult learning Spanish for the first time. So ability wise, we're on the same level. And I could do that in Gesher. And it was really beautiful to watch that these kids were in the same class. And I credit that to the 12-year-old being able to look at the 5-year-old and say, you know, it's okay. We're all in the same, you know, same boat. We're learning together. And they actually ended up being great friends. And I think that's one of the perks of homeschooling also, is that multiple ages of kids can be friends with each other, because they're not you know, classed. They're not, you know, I'm only friends with 8 year olds with the birthdays between May and December, because the next group is in the, you know, the grade below because of the cutoff. It's not like that in homeschooling.
Right.
So, yeah. Okay. So that was a tangent. I'm sorry. the classes. Okay. So I have some, I basically modeled the Gesher classes after what I would do in a day school classroom. So I had to, I have some content based classes. So like Parsha and Dinim, Dinim meaning the Jewish holidays, so like the flow of the Jewish calendar. I call those classes my Jewish literacy classes. So those classes are content-based. You don't have to know Hebrew to be in those classes. It's helpful because, you know, I have Akev written on the board, for example. But when I talk about Parsha Akev, we're learning about it, you know, in a very, not in a skills-based way. So we're doing the storyline of the Parsha. In the older classes, we're doing maybe a Devar Torah relating to something mentioned in this week's Parsha. So that's my Parsha and my Dinim class. Then I have skills-based classes. So my skills-based classes, I would say the main class that I offer is Chumash, because as a Jewish kid, that is something that parents really want their kids to be able to open up a Chumash and be a lifelong Chumash learner. Not something that you, you know, memorize 50 mi amar al mis or 50 al mina amars, you know, who said to who is it talking about, but be able to open a Chumash and be able to learn it beyond school. You know, so many kids go to day school and they never pick up a Chumash again after day school's over. But I knew that that was a skill that I want my kids to be able to take with them past their formative years at home. So I offer Chumash 1, which is an entry level class. That's like, I always say it's comparable to a second and third grade day school classroom, Chumash 2, which is fourth and fifth grade, and Chumash 3, which is sixth and seventh. So again, those classes are meant to be two-year classes. So a kid can be in Chumash 1, let's say, for 2 years, because the classes are only offered twice a week. It's not the same time that you're sitting in a regular day school classroom. So I do feel like it takes a little bit longer over the course of the school year to solidify those skills. But that being said, if a kid is particularly motivated, they can move through the classes in 3 years. And wow. Then this year, last year, I also added Hebrew reading for kids who've never learned to read Hebrew, Hebrew 1, which is like the next level up from reading. So it's like conversational Hebrew, and Hebrew 2, which is slightly higher than that. And then Navi, I also added last year as well for the older kids.
Now, are these classes recorded? Like if my let's say, well, I'm jumping ahead to some of the homeschooling things, but one of the advantages of homeschooling is I could take a vacation whenever I want. I'm not slave to the school schedule. So I want to take a vacation in the middle of March when nobody else in the country is on vacation, but Gesher is still going. So what if I don't want to make my kids, you know, go to school on vacation. So can I get these later? Can I have my kids catch up?
Yeah, well, first of all, a lot of parents will have their kids log on to a Gesher class because they're very low stress. So if the kid is on vacation with their family and they turn on their parents' phone for 45 minutes, they can listen to a Parsha class. Right. A Chumash class is a little bit more challenging to focus because you have your Chumash and your workbook, but you still can kind of be in the class. That being said, I do record all the classes. If a parent wants, I'll send them the full recording. But what's actually awesome that I'm working on, that I'm slowly getting there, is uploading all of my recordings to this virtual library. I started this last year. The website is gesher.thinkific.com. I use this platform called Thinkific, where I upload my classes and parents can pay a subscription fee. So even if they can't attend the live classes, they have the recorded classes option. Now, the difference is I scrub those of any of my students so that we don't have students in them. So a 45-minute class will probably become more like 20 minutes because you don't have all the live participation and interaction. But I've been, so far what I have up there is my davening class, because I offer davening every morning, and Parsha and some Dinim classes. Eventually, my goal is to upload all of the classes like Chumash and Hebrew reading so that kids anywhere can learn all these things anytime they want.
That's what I was going to ask. Is that subscription available only to Gesher families, or is that available to anyone right now?
It's available to anyone. Anybody can subscribe. Actually, if you're a Gesher Live student, if you participate, I actually am offering a promotion out so that it's free for them. So it's a way for them to catch up on recordings without me having to email them the recording. So for example, my davening classes, a lot of my students are public schoolers. They can't attend davening from 8 to 8:30 Eastern time every morning. So they can access that whenever they want because they're already a guest share student.
All right. Phenomenal. So you mentioned a little bit earlier about how maybe some of this started in your family. You have a child that might not have fit in a certain learning environment. So what do you do for, like, I guess, other neurodiverse students? Is that something that you planned for? Obviously, not every single neurodiverse option out there has come to be one of your students, but what do you do for those types of students that might have something that a little bit more of a different touch?
So that's a great question. I do find that a lot of kids, for example, any kids with attention issues, it's much easier for them to sit through a guest share class because it's only 45 minutes. You're not sitting in a chair at school for 6 to 8 hours during the day. So it's much easier for them to focus. I really try in my classes to use, different modes of teaching throughout the lesson. So yes, I may be talking, but then we'll play a game. Then I'll do a slideshow. Then I'll show a video. I'll go back to talking. We'll play a game. So I'm trying to keep them, you know, engaged the entire time, which is definitely a challenge on Zoom. But when the kids are only attending one 45-minute Zoom class a day, it's much easier than you think. I think also some parents have seen that their kids need more redirecting. So I encourage parents, if you want to sit with your child while they're in class, that's fine too. Sit next to them, you know, as long as you're kind of sitting off camera, because I don't want the other kids to be nervous that there are other adults in the room. So then, you know, I encourage them to sit with them to make sure they have their materials, to have their supplies. They're more than welcome to sit with them. Some kids, you know, I know do their guest share classes, you know, on a tablet. Some kids will use a computer. It really, you know, the parents, what's so great about homeschooling in general is that as parents, we forget, we just hand our kids over to the school and assume that they know best. But really, as parents, we know our kids best. We know the best way to transmit the information, whatever that is. So I always tell parents, if there's something that you think might help your child, do it. Or if I can do it, let me know. How can I help?
So that leads me to a very obvious question. You mentioned about your background in education. I'm assuming you have a master's degree of some sort, or at least a bachelor's. You're nodding your head, so that's MC. I feel like that's master's.
Yes, master's degree in education.
Master's degree in education. Parents who don't have such backgrounds may not have even gone to college. May just have a K-12 education under their belt. Those parents, what do you say to those parents who might be a little bit more apprehensive about starting this type of a program?
So when I tell people I homeschool, they usually nod and say knowingly, oh, that makes sense because you're a teacher, right? I always get that from people like, oh, well, I could never do that. So what makes me a qualified homeschooler is not that I am a teacher. It's that I am my children's mother. That's it. Because when we are told when our kids need to go to school that they need to go to school to learn what they need to know, we just accept that. Like, yes, they need to go to school, right? They need the socialization of a classroom to be normal. But what I realized, and I realized this when my daughter had some educational difficulties, was that I was the first one to notice it. It was me. So when I realized that and I communicated my concerns to her teacher, and her teacher, you know, concurred with me that she was having difficulties in class, it kind of felt like a superpower, because here I am, you know, thinking I'm just turning my kids over and you educate them. And all of a sudden the teacher was looking at me saying, you know what you're saying makes sense because of A, B, and C that I'm seeing in the classroom. I was like, I know her better than you know her. Oh yeah, I'm her mom, right? And so I see their learning styles, and as a homeschool mom, I'm constantly adapting, right? So sometimes my daughter, you know, we definitely struggle with certain subjects. I'm not going to lie. There are definitely hard days. So my daughter likes it when I teach her a math lesson, and then I let her do the entire worksheet alone. My son, the younger one than her, needs more handholding. So he wants me to actually work through the first few problems with him, right? What I am seeing as a parent is that every kid's learning style is different. And you see that as a parent, you see it as a teacher when you have 20 kids in the classroom who definitely don't all learn the same way, and now only educating 4. So it's so much easier to be able to hone in on what each one needs.
So we spoke about a little bit about the educational aspect of it. A lot of the reasons that people not, and you even mentioned in the beginning of this, but one of the main reasons that a person might go towards the homeschooling route is the tuition aspect of it, especially in the Jewish community. that might make sense if, like you said, you have four children. Maybe if you add the tuition cost of four children up, maybe it's worth it for a parent to leave their job and become a homeschooler, a homeschooling parent. But with the reduction in tuition comes also a reduction in salary, because at least one parent has to stay home and, right. and leave their job. So how do you mitigate against that? So it's I'm not paying tuition anymore, but I'm also losing this full-time salary that I might've been paying otherwise.
It's interesting that you say that, because for me, I was making a salary, but my entire salary was going to school. So it was okay that I wasn't working, because it kind of canceled each other out. And I think that as parents, you know, you make the decision that works for your family, in the sense that, you know, you may have your kid in school, but, you know, a lot of parents, a lot of my friends actually will pay a lot more for childcare, let's say, you know, now they're working full time. And I have friends who have to stop working because the childcare is so much more expensive than what they're actually bringing home from their job, and parking and, you know, traveling, especially with the cost of gas. And they're, you know, they're throwing up their hands saying, I'm spending all this money just to put my kid in childcare, when if I just stayed home, I wouldn't have to do that trade-off. So, you know, it doesn't always cancel out. What I can say is that I do know people who work while they homeschool, who are working from home, or they take their kid with them to their job. And there's so many resources online for things like parents who need to take their kids. I mean, there are a lot of families where, you know, single parent families who homeschool, and for whatever reason, you know, they need a homeschool, or maybe they're traveling a lot, or, you know, the school system isn't working for their children for whatever reason, and they're making it work. It's possible. You know, a big resource for me online was Facebook, I said before, but there are so many online groups of, you know, working while homeschooling, and, you know, what resources can I use, and online classes, and not necessarily that you're going to have an online babysitter, but the homeschool community is such a warm, loving community in general, that everybody is kind of out there to support you and help you and give you suggestions. And it's never, you know, you're not good enough because you're not educating your kid in this way. There are a thousand ways, right? There are how many ways to eat a Reese's? There are so many different ways to homeschool your kids, and you are never failing them. One of my favorite podcasters is Julie Bogart, who her podcast is called A Brave Writer's Life in Brief, I think it's called. I'm probably butchering the name. But she homeschooled all of her five kids, and she always says there is no behind in homeschool. You're never behind. You always say, parents are always nervous. They always say to me, my kid's going to be behind. My kid's going to be behind. But that is what is so amazing about homeschool. There's no behind. We think that they have to know a certain thing by a certain time, but they don't. They will get it in their time when they're ready to learn it. That's when they'll learn it, and it will click, and it will be fine.
So Gesher is basically a Jewish education homeschooling tool. Do you recommend, I don't know if you're branching out into secular subjects, math, writing, reading, those things. Or is there a program that you recommend to kind of pair with Gesher? Because my kid goes to day school, and then they get limited Kurdish to call. Is there one that you like working with, or that you recommend for people to use?
I could talk about this for hours. There's so many awesome resources. You know, I use Khan Academy for math. It's amazing. The video, I mean, my dream one day is to make a Khan Academy for Jewish studies. Like, to me, Jewish Judaic studies did not have to be like, you know, an elitist thing that you get a wonderful Jewish education when you go to this day school, and just a so-so Jewish education when you go here. You know, like, why can't we just educate everyone? Like, if you want it, you can have it. You know, that I think that's amazing that Khan Academy is there for kids who are motivated and adults who are motivated to learn topics. So I love Khan Academy. I love this website called outschool.com, which is live classes, but for any subject. I use it for my kids as like a motivator, because they think it's so cool. Well, before Gesher, of course, they wanted to take classes online all the time. Now they're not running to do it necessarily because their Gesher classes are online. But they would love it because they would want to learn about aardvarks. Okay, we're going to Google it. We're going to find a class about aardvarks. And there's a 45-minute lecture on aardvarks. And, you know, my daughter wants to learn about how to do voiceovers. There's a class on voiceovers. You can find anything. The website that I use most often is called allinonehomeschool.com, made by this homeschooling mom in Pennsylvania. She just puts everything online. So it's not a teacher. It doesn't teach them, but it's an entire curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade. So it is there. The resources are there and they are plenty.
We spoke a lot about the positives of homeschooling. And fair warning, I'm going to have the same discussion in a minute about negatives. Okay, but let's start with the positives. We spoke about potential savings in tuition. We spoke about the knowing your kid more than maybe a teacher might, like you as a parent will know your child. We briefly spoke about the ability to take vacations at any given time. Last time I spoke about this on this show with Yael Hanover, who is another homeschooling parent. She mentioned that there's a safety aspect that you can you don't have to worry about something happening in a school when all of the people that you know are right in front of you. Like you're not letting anyone else into your home, and you're not necessarily worried about something some intrusion that might happen in a school. Can you maybe provide another positive or another several positives that people have in the homeschooling area that we might not automatically think of?
Sure. I think a lot of kids, especially today when education is so rigorous and there's so many tests and the goal is just to get into a good high school, to get into a good college, homeschooling really slows down the pace of life. And it's twofold, I think, this benefit, because it really allows your family to enjoy their time together and not just be about dinner, bath, bed, getting to sports, getting, you know, your homework done. It allows you to kind of really slow down and enjoy life for just being, you know, sitting with your kid outside playing a card game, watching a silly YouTube video together. Like I really find that one of the best benefits of homeschooling for me and my family is just being able to do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it. Now, another benefit for me specifically is that as a kid growing up, because we were so overscheduled with school, because school is taking up so much of their day, I find that they finish, you know, I see some kids finishing 12 years of their formal education and they have no idea what they want to do with their life. They're still very confused, and they go to college and they're still very confused. And one of the amazing benefits of homeschool is that you can explore what makes you happy now. So as kids, they have time to do the things they love. They can take piano lessons and guitar lessons and ice skating. And we go to the beach to do marine science once a week. All of a sudden, they're able to explore so much more that we couldn't do when we were in school from 8 to 4 and then just getting through the rest of the day until bedtime. Now, granted, when kids are older, they have more time to do those things. But as homeschoolers, you have so much more time so that when you finish high school, you're able to say, you know what, I really enjoyed learning marine science. I want to continue that. I want to go down that field. Or my son, for example, our neighbor is an orthopedic surgeon. He loves talking to my neighbor about all of the, you know, just everything about bones, about structures, about ligaments. And he can, you know, he went to the nurse when we were at sleepaway camp and he hurt his finger and he was telling the nurse what ligament he thinks he might have torn. And the nurse was looking at him like, what? Stuff, but he just wanted to learn about it, so he likes learning about it. I don't know, is he going to be an orthopedic surgeon? Great for me. But if he's not, you know, it's just something that he enjoys, and he would never be able to have the time to sit and do that if he were, you know, studying for a test the next
right.
day.
It'll help him when he gets onto Jeopardy
at least
that much. So now let's go over to the minuses. Honestly, some of the minuses that I would have thought of, we already spoke about and why they might not be minuses. You have to teach different ages. If you a parent who needs to be home and the trade-off with their salary, we spoke about that. We spoke about the big bugaboo of social skills building, which is, by the way, why I asked you if your kids were in camp and to see if like there was any difference that you noticed. But I guess another one that you and I spoke about previously before recording was there's not going to be a homeschooling basketball team going on the road to play other schools. Can you maybe talk about some things that you might be giving up when you're homeschooling with the knowledge that not everything is a perfect system?
Correct.
And this is what you might just be giving up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that there is a perfect answer for anyone. You know, I think that every parent has to really evaluate what works for them. But I definitely think I wouldn't say negative, but one of the challenges for me as a homeschooler in the Jewish community was definitely feeling part of what was going on. I definitely feel like as homeschoolers, especially that first year, I took myself out of the social equation. So I knew that my kids were not getting invited to birthday parties, were getting forgotten for play dates. And, you know, and it was hard. It was really hard for me to, you have a built-in social network when you're in a Jewish day school that you don't have when you homeschool or you send your kids to public school. You just don't. That is definitely, or was definitely, a challenge for me. What helped me overcome that was, you know, just being crazy and dogged about play dates. I texted mothers. You can ask, you know, these ladies who get my texts all the time every Saturday night, what are your kids doing tomorrow? And sometimes it would be me bribing them, like, I'm going to take my kids bowling and then for pizza. You want to come? Can I take all your kids? You know, and I take a carpool of five boys because I wanted my kids to have that opportunity to hang out with other kids. So, you know, that was how I got them to my house. So, you know, okay, you know, let's do it. But that was definitely a challenge. It was definitely hard. And I would say COVID probably helped that also, because that so many everybody. More people started homeschooling.
Right.
So we weren't alone anymore. And a couple of those people had never gone back to regular school. So thank God we have that network now that they're not totally alone. But that's definitely a challenge. And I do think that, you know, you have to ask yourself, if you have one kid or two kids and they're very far apart, that's definitely also a challenge also, because you're not, you know, I have this built-in school at home because thank God there's four of them at home. So they're able to play with each other and hang out with each other. But if you only have one kid, it's harder. That's not to say that it's not possible. It is. I have friends at home school with one child at home and it's fine. But it's definitely a challenge.
We can't let this go without you talking about the cost of such a program, because if one of the things that we were trying to help out with was tuition costs, I have to ask you what the cost of the of a year of Gesher would be.
So it depends. It's the Gesher is a la carte, meaning parents can take one class, they can take five classes. So, you know, one class is $600 for the whole year, August through May. We finish the end of May. And a twice a week class is $1,200. And I try to keep it pretty transparent so that you can calculate what you're going to have to pay, you know, for one kid, for two kids. I offer a 20% sibling discount. So it's cheaper, you know, the more kids you sign up, or I would say the second and subsequent kids. But I'm trying to keep it affordable. Those have been my prices, I think, since COVID started. And really, there's at this point, it's my time, it's the materials, but I'm trying to keep overhead low. You know, I have I have to have good internet at home to run a Zoom class where I'm sharing a screen and showing videos, and I have multiple kids. So I have to, you know, have that expense, but I really try to keep costs low because I know that some people are choosing this lifestyle based on financial considerations. And that being said, I do offer scholarships for the parents. You know, if I have a single parent home where they're trying to make ends meet, I definitely try to work with them, because what's most important to me is just educating Jewish kids. And I always tell people, it's so amazing to me to be able to do this, what I was trained to do, what I love doing, and also homeschool my kids. Like, to me, this is the best of both worlds. I'm able to do both. And I can't believe I get to do it every day. I feel unbelievably blessed that I get to do it every day. There are definitely hard days, but I feel so fortunate to have this dual lifestyle.
Phenomenal. Where can people find out more about Gesher? Where could they go to? I know you listed a couple of websites earlier, but I don't think you listed the primary one.
Yes. Okay. my main website is GesherProgram.com. Gesher Program, all one word. Yes, all websites are one word. GesherProgram.com. I was, you know, it was when I was first making that website, I was looking for what my website name would be, and of course I, like, you know, tried all these, you know, different iterations before you see what website is available. So it's gesherprogram.com. The website for recorded classes is gesher.thinkific.com. And yeah, I have a blog about homeschooling at mamaneedsrecess.com. You can check that out. And that was a great name that my brother helped me come up with, and I think that's it.
Are you on social media anywhere?
I am. I'm on Instagram and Facebook. Instagram at Gesher Program. Is that how you say it? I'm dating myself. Gesher at Gesher Program. And Facebook, I think it's Gesher Judaic Studies Program. But if you search it on Facebook, you'll find it also.
And we'll make it easy for everybody because we always link to all of these things that you just pointed out in the show notes and on our social media accounts as well.
Okay, awesome. I'm not on TikTok, unfortunately.
Not on TikTok, not on Twitter.
I'm behind the times, I know.
It's all right. Not on MySpace, that's fine. Is there?
I might be on MySpace, you might be able to look me up.
Is there, before I let you go, is there anything else that you think that is important for us to know about Gesher, about homeschooling in general, or about anything else that's on your mind?
Just that, you know, I feel like I'm always on this soapbox of homeschool, and I know that it doesn't work for everyone. I know there's no one size fits all solution. But I think that we always, as parents, get bogged down in the education that we give our kids and what they need to know to move on to the next grade. But one thing that has always resonated with me, and I'll go back to Julie Bogart, she says, you know, education, there's so much of education that is invisible. Education is an atmosphere. It isn't something, you know, that is tangible that you can touch. It's not a program. It's not accredited teaching. And it's directly connected to their experience of well-being and their atmosphere of family life. And whatever that means for you as a homeschooler or as someone who sends your kids to day school, that is the most important education that you can offer your kids. To me, that's when, you know, even when my 9-year-old is bouncing around the house and she's getting on my last nerve, that I can still speak respectfully and calmly to her. You know, it's hard, but it's possible. And this kind of education is what drives me and what motivates me to keep going, because to me, that's the most important thing, is having kids or you know, helping them foster them being kind, good people that feel a connection to their Judaism. I always say the best Jewish education that you can give your kids is simply living Jewishly, setting that Shabbos table, you know, baking hamantashen, whatever it means for you, being happy about going to shul, whatever it means for you, just living Jewishly. That's all we can do.
Phenomenal. And what a way to end the Jewish Living podcast episode.
Exactly. I did that on purpose.
That was so nice. I'm going to call you Morachani because that's what it says on your Zoom name.
I should have changed that before.
That's all right. Chani Gershman, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate your time, and much hatzlacha with Gesher.
Thank you so much, Izzo. It was such a pleasure to be here and an honor. Thank you.
My thanks to Chani Kirshner for joining me this week. If you would like to hear more about homeschooling, check out episode 7 of our show, Homeschooling with Yael Hanover. Until next time, Kol Tov.
The Jewish Living Podcast is produced by Sreli Pikus. Our theme song is The Band by A.B. Rottenberg. Follow us on Facebook at The Jewish Living Podcast and on Twitter and Instagram at Jewish_living. You can also email the show at jewishlivingpodcast@gmail.com. The Jewish Living Podcast is recorded in conjunction with the Queens Jewish Link.